a special session. Perfect timing, obviously. And basically an educational session for the commissioners. The presenter is our longstanding district attorney, Rich Davis. And I'd like to have Rich take over.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, thanks for having me over here. We've got a couple purposes to achieve today. First, I want to go over the open government rules dealing with public records and open public meetings. That's required of new commissioners. It's also required of commissioners every 4 years. So we're going to get that out of the way, and we'll have a certificate then that will be kept in the district's files to show that that training has been completed. It's important not only because it's required by statute, but it's also important because the commission needs to understand what it means to be compliant with both of those acts. It's very important to the citizens and public that their commission abide by those. And so we'll talk about that for maybe half of the presentation today, and then I'm going to go into kind of how a board should operate, some do's and don'ts, what it means to be a commissioner, what your respective roles are, and that kind of thing. And so we go through this. If you have questions, feel free to ask. Otherwise, I'll just carry on, and we'll go ahead and start. Whenever I give this talk, particularly when I get to the management and governance part of the talk, I always kind of have some disclaimers that I make. I didn't develop this presentation with this board in mind. Nobody called me and said, we've got problems on this board, and so I want you to address these particular things. This is a presentation I give basically to all governments that I represent who've asked for me to provide this kind of training. There's nothing that's really germane to this board. So if you see something here that's on the slide and you're thinking that I addressed it because of this, something that happened on this board, that's not the case. I'm not singling anybody out. I'm not making specific comments about anything that's happened. But I think that the points that that I make are applicable to kind of any elected board. So a couple assumptions that I always make when I'm dealing with elected officials is that everybody who serves on the board is here to serve the public. You all took the effort of getting elected and now serving on the board in order to serve the public. You came here with that purpose in mind. And you're interested in the district being well run. You want to see it operate effectively. You want to see it accomplish its mission. I also assume that the senior staff are interested in the same thing. They want to see a well-run district. They want to see a well-run board so that they get the direction they need to carry out the commission's desires and goals. I also assume that there's always room for improvement. It's rare that I find a situation where the commission knows everything and everything runs just perfectly. So I assume that there's always room for improvement, not only from the commission, but also from the staff, and that there's things that we can learn when we talk about these things. Understand that this is not an intuitive role. So when I first took a seat on a nonprofit board in Bellingham, I thought this is pretty self-explanatory, I know exactly what I'm doing, and I realized, you know, this is not really all that intuitive. And I started looking at some secondary sources to figure out what my role is, where am I overstepping my bounds, what's the difference between governance, proper role of a board member, versus management, which is what staff does. And I found that we as a board would slip over that line constantly because it's tempting. We know certain things, and as a lawyer, I knew certain things about employment. When an employment issue would come up, and I'd feel like, oh, I got to get involved in that. That wasn't really my role because we were more concerned with governance. We'll talk a lot about that. But I don't think that just being a member of an elected board is something that's intuitive. It's something that you need to think about. I also understand that each commissioner came here for approaches the job from a different perspective. All right, everybody comes with their own background, their own interests, and some things are more interest to some commissioners than others, and that each commissioner is going to be unique in that regard, but we're here with a common purpose. All right, so those are the assumptions I make. Let's talk first about the Open Public Meetings Act. And then we'll follow that up with the Public Records Act. So essentially, this requires meetings to be held in public, unless there's a legitimate reason to have an executive session. This training, as I said, needs to be done no later than every 4 years for commissioners. You can take this training in different ways, but you're here today, so you'll have your certificate and you will have satisfied the requirements. But if you're interested or want to learn more, here are some other sources where you can find things on the Open Public Meetings Act and public records. The OPMA, again, all meetings have to be open to the public from start to finish, except for executive sessions. And why do we have this act? Well, the people want to know what their government officials are doing. They want to remain informed. When does the Open Public Meetings Act apply? It applies whenever a quorum of elected officials discuss agency business, whether or not they're in the same room. All right, so that kind of communication can occur in a variety of different ways. It can occur via telephone, video conference, it can occur via an email discussion. Whenever a quorum of elected officials discuss agency business, then that discussion is to be in an open public meeting. It doesn't apply when you're not discussing agency business. All right. So if you go to a social function, for instance, or you go to some awards banquet, or you go to some seminar that doesn't have anything to do with the public hospital district, those are situations where the Open Public Meetings Act does not apply, even if you're talking amongst yourselves, as long as, and here's the key, as long as you're not talking about agency business. Once you start talking about public hospital district business as a quorum, then that needs to be in the open. And it has to either be at a special meeting or a regular meeting. Now, there's an exception to that, of course, and that is labor negotiations. The Open Public Meetings Act does not apply to labor negotiations, so when we talk internally about labor strategy, labor negotiations, at a meeting, we usually call that an executive session, but technically speaking, the Open Public Meetings Act just doesn't apply. What is the governing body? Let me just go through the statute here, 4230.030, which says all meetings of the governing body, and governing body is a defined term, shall be open and public, and open to the public. So the governing body is clearly the Board of Commissioners, but it also could be a committee of the board. And so if the board decides that a subset of the board needs to do something on behalf of the board, and it's that committee is acting on behalf of the board, then it exercises some kind of actual or de facto decision-making authority, then that committee is also subject to the Open Public Meetings Act, even if there's not a quorum of the commissioners present. So keep in mind that's not just the board, but also any committee that's acting on behalf of the governing body with those kinds of authority. And I understand there have been, from time to time, committees that have been established by this board, and so you just need to be aware of that. What is a meeting? A meeting, as I said, doesn't need to be the physical presence of the commissioners, but it really is any time where the public agency is taking, where the board is taking action. So that means a discussion of district business. And one of the common situations is through email. And let me explain how that works. Okay. So one commissioner can send a substantive email to the rest of the board, which is fine. It's discussing district business. But where the problem comes is when there's a response to that. So now you've got a discussion. The first email is fine, but when you reply all, and now there's a two-way discussion going on, now you've got a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act. So with substantive emails, just the first email is okay. The responses would not be. What about emails that talk about things that aren't really related to district business, but maybe unrelated scheduling, for instance, of going to a conference over in Eastern Washington? That would not be involved in district business. That would not necessarily be a meeting. But I would exercise caution any time that you are discussing anything that is it's tangentially related to district business. Be conservative and assume that it would be covered by the Act. What is action? Action is basically any kind of discussions. It can be just talking about district business. It could be something more formal, like taking public testimony, sitting here at a regularly scheduled meeting or a special meeting, reviews and evaluations, all those kinds of things. About any kinds of discussion that you would have regarding district business is what we call action. Okay. Now, final action is different than that, but any action that a quorum of the governing body has is subject to the Open Public Meetings Act. Final action is just the final decision that you make, whether it's approval of a motion, approval of a resolution, or any other kinds of formal decisions that the governing body takes. That's the kind of, and I haven't seen your minutes, but ordinarily those are the things that you see when you look at minutes, see a motion that was made, seconded, and adopted. That's what we're talking about, a final action. Final action has to be taken in the public. You cannot go into executive session and take final action. Now, oftentimes what will happen in executive session, particularly if there's litigation that you're discussing, you get your attorney present, and you give some direction. You tell the attorney that we want you to take this action or something, but that's not final action on anything. That's just providing some direction. But when you take final action, that has to be in the public. You can't take secret ballots back in executive session and come out into open session. What about traveling together? Traveling to a meeting or things of that nature. That is okay as long as you're not talking district business, even if you've got a quorum of board members. However, I always say be cautious about that because the public is watching what you do. And it may not have the appearance of being open and transparent. So just think about those things when you were to travel together or go to a meeting where there's a quorum of the board and you have not noted a special meeting. Regular meetings, I want to talk about the difference between a regular meeting and a special meeting and notice requirements and what can transpire at those kinds of meetings. So the regular meetings are the ones that recur on a regular basis. You should have a resolution on file beginning of each year that says when your meetings are to be held. And those meetings, you can discuss anything you want, and you can take final action on anything that you want, whether or not it's on the agenda. Recently, a few years ago, there were some additional notice requirements that were imposed for regular meetings. And currently, you must make the agenda of each regular meeting available online no later than 24 hours in advance of the published start time unless your agency either does not have a website or employs fewer than 10 full-time employees. This is a law that doesn't have much teeth because it does not prohibit an agency from later modifying that agenda when you get to the meeting. It doesn't invalidate, if you didn't post it in time, it doesn't invalidate any action that was taken at the meeting. And it doesn't provide any basis for a challenger of that action to recover attorney's fees and costs. But it is a requirement, and again, the exemptions are if you don't have a website, which I understand we have a website, and if you employ 10 or fewer full-time employees, I don't know if we have more than that.
Just one full-time right now.
Just one full-time employee. So you're exempt from this requirement as of right now. Although you could comply with it if you have a website and have the capabilities of doing so, but it's optional. Special meetings. The difference between a special meeting and a regular meeting is it's not regularly scheduled. It's not part of your resolution that you pass at the beginning of each year. It would be called by the president or by a majority of the board members. In terms of notifying the public, there's a 24-hour notice requirement before the special meeting that you have to give to each member of the board. And you have to give to each local media outlet that has requested to be provided with notice of special meetings. You also have to post the notice at the main entrance of the district's principal location. And if you're holding the meeting somewhere else, which sometimes happens, you have to post it there as well. So let's say you were holding a meeting over in the boardroom over at the hospital. You'd have to post it here, because this is the main location, and you'd have to post it over there where the meeting is actually being held. Once again, there's a requirement to post this on the district's website unless the same exemptions exist as for regular meetings. All right. With special meetings, you can't just take action, final action, on anything and everything like you can at a regular meeting. With a special meeting, the agenda, first of all, has to identify the time, the place where the meeting is going to be held, and the business that's going to be transacted. And you can only take final action or final disposition on an action that is listed on the agenda. So you can discuss any matter that you want, but cannot take final action unless it was listed on the agenda. Sometimes you will have, rarely, but sometimes you may have a situation where there's an emergency. And it would be just infeasible to give the required 24 hours notice. In those cases, where there is either injury or damage to persons or property occurring, aware that the injury or damage would get worse if you were to wait the full 24 hours, you can waive that requirement and call an emergency special meeting. That emergency can't be self-generated. In other words, if it was through, you know, the commission being dilatory in the past about something, you can't create your own emergency. But we're talking about natural disasters and that kind of thing. All right, public attendance. The public is entitled to attend any meeting that is open to the public. Except for executive sessions. An agency cannot impose conditions on the attendance of the public. And for instance, it can't require people to register their names in order to come into the meeting room, or to complete a questionnaire, or to do anything else as a condition of attending the meeting. What about sign-up sheets for public comment? A lot of times we have public comment and a lot of people want to talk. We have, just for orderly progression of speakers, we have sign-up sheets. That's fine. There's nothing inappropriate about that. But you cannot, and that's just for kind of the orderly transaction of business. You're entitled to pass reasonable rules and regulations, as it were, for the orderly transaction of business. A sign-up sheet is totally appropriate. An agency, as I said, can establish reasonable rules of conduct. Now, these rules can be both for the commission, for the benefit of the commission, and can apply to the public that is attending the meetings. Some examples of rules are Robert's Rules of Order. We all know about those. Some agencies actually refer to Robert's Rules of Order if there is a gap in their bylaws. And there's a difference of opinion depending on which lawyer or consultant you may ask on whether you should follow Robert's Rules of Order. They are admittedly complex. It takes somebody who's spent some time understanding, learning the rules. And they are, like I said, they're complicated. It's up to each agency. There's no legal requirement to adopt Robert's Rules of Order, but a lot of agencies use them as kind of a backstop in case there's a gap in the bylaws or other procedural rules that you've adopted. What other kinds of rules might you pass? Limitations on public comment are a common one. There's no legal requirement to offer public comment. Most agencies do because they want to hear what the public has to say. They want to offer a portion of the meeting to the public so that they can hear what's of interest. However, keep in mind that your commission meetings are at the end of the day before the commission to conduct its business. You have limited time together, and so you're entitled to impose, if you decide to have public comment, you can impose restrictions on that. Some of the more common restrictions are imposing a restriction on the length of time that any individual speaker can speak. Common requirement is or limitation is 3 minutes, but you could have something else. It just depends on what's appropriate, and you can change that from meeting to meeting. If you have a packed meeting, in other words, a meeting that is got a lot of business you got to conduct, you may say, for this meeting, we're going to limit speakers to 1 minute or 2 minutes or whatever. But you can change that from meeting to meeting depending on how much business you need to transact. You can impose a restriction that speakers only speak once when they're giving public comment. I've been to commission meetings before where there have been, there's been kind of a colloquy that has emerged between the members of the public and the commission. And it really depends on, oftentimes that's in a kind of a small district where you might have one or two people attend from the public, and it doesn't really interrupt the district's business to do that. More often than not, though, you see agencies evolve. As they get larger, as they have more business to conduct, that kind of informal dialogue kind of goes away because the commission needs to get its business done. And so what you'll find is that limitations get imposed on speaking only once, a particular time limit for each speaker. And in some cases, I was doing an RFA, a Regional Fire Authority, with Snohomish County and Snohomish County Fire District 1 in the city of Linwood last year. And one of the things that I saw with the city of Linwood that was interesting was they limited the types of comments that could be offered to issues that were not on the agenda that night. So you could speak on anything you wanted as long as it wasn't on an issue that the council was to take action on that evening. You could have spoken on it at the prior meeting, that's fine, but they just had a limitation on that. They wanted the council to be able to focus and to talk amongst themselves without public input at the meeting where final action was to be taken. So, again, that's an optional thing, but it is one of the, like I said, this is just part of the rules that each agency can decide what's appropriate for it. And then finally, a limitation that I like to see is that public comments need to be respectful in nature and not be personal. And the chair has to kind of if there is such a limitation, the chair is responsible for ensuring that the public comments do meet those requirements. It tends to lead to a degeneration of the character and the quality of a meeting when you have members of the public come in and start taking personal aim at individuals. And I find that it's better if the comments are kept kind of respectful in nature and not to make personal attacks against the commission, but rather talk about the issues that are of interest to the public. So, again, those are, I don't know what rules you may have in place now, but those are some examples of rules and things that the commission should discuss. All right, what happens if you were to have an interruption at your meeting, such that you could not conduct your business? Well, first of all, cameras and tape recorders, those are not deemed by themselves to be disruptive to a meeting. The AGO opinion, AGO means Attorney General Opinion, from 1998, said that cameras and tape recorders are allowable unless they're disruptive. So you may see somebody with a cell phone recording the meeting, or you may see somebody with a video camera setting up. Again, as long as it's not disruptive to the meeting, you have to allow that to occur. What happens, though, when you have a meeting that is disrupted by people that are speaking out, calling names, or just interrupting the commission so that it can't do its business? We have several options available to you. And this is a rare situation of only, as I've been representing public agencies for well over 20 years, I've only seen this happen maybe twice. And in those cases, you have the following options. You can have the disruptive people removed, assuming that they will voluntarily leave the meeting room, which they won't always. In which case, then you can clear the meeting room and continue the meeting, just have everybody leave. Or what's more likely to happen is you move the meeting to a different location. If you do that, leave the public here and just go to a different location, then you can only take final action on those matters that were on the agenda. So even if it's a regularly scheduled meeting, and ordinarily you could change the agenda and take action on other things, you can't do that if you decide to move the meeting somewhere else. No matter what, when if you were to clear the meeting room or to have the disruptor's persons removed, the press, the media, is allowed to remain in the room, unless the media was one of the disruptive individuals that caused you to take this action in the first place. And you can, although you're not required to allow disruptive individuals to come back into the meeting if they were to settle down. All right, now, executive session. Executive session is that part of a meeting where you can send the public out or you go into a separate room so you can have a discussion in private. This part of the Open Public Meetings Act is strictly construed. And what I mean by that is you have to have a reason that is described in the statute in order to go into executive session. If you don't have the precise reason available to you, it's just not possible to have the discussion in executive session. When you go into executive session, there ought to be a time limit that is given to the members of the public, and you set forth the exact purpose and the citation to the statute. In the statute, where executive session is talked about, is at the bottom of this slide, 4230.110. And I've seen the auditor kind of criticize agencies before when they use a general exemption that is not really set forth in the statute. A common one is personnel matters. I hear that all the time. I attend these commission meetings, and we're going to go into executive session to discuss personnel issues. That in and of itself is not an appropriate exemption. It is appropriate, as we'll talk about on the next slide or two, to talk about the review of the performance of a public employee. But when you talk about just general personnel issues, that's not a viable reason to be in executive session. So, again, let the public know how long you're going to be in executive session, say what the reason is, and cite to the statute. And Pam or Jerry can find the exact statute or the exact subsection of 4230.110 so that you have that set forth in the minutes. Now, if you spend longer in executive session than you thought, let's say that you say, well, before we're going into executive session, you think it's going to take a half hour, ends up taking at a half hour into it, you can tell it's going to take another 20 minutes. You must then come out and tell the public we're going to be here another 20 minutes. Now, if you wind up early, let's say it only took 10 as opposed to the extra 20, I say, my advice is wait until the full 20 minutes is expired before you resume the open part of the meeting. And why is that? Well, a member of the public would have heard you say an additional 20 minutes, and they might have thought, well, let me go down and get a quick coffee, and I'll have plenty of time. It's only a short drive down the road. But if you start before you said you're going to start, then that person doesn't have the benefit of actually being present when the meeting resumes. So stick to whatever time limit you offer the public. Common mistakes. So again, can't use an executive session for just a catch-all personnel issue, but you can use it for personnel-related matters, such as reviewing someone's performance, conducting personnel evaluation, those kinds of things. You can't use an executive session to talk with the district's legal counsel unless there's either potential litigation or threatened litigation or actual litigation. So if you want to talk to me or the district's other legal counsel in private, there has to be some pending litigation or threatened litigation that we're discussing. Otherwise, that discussion has to occur out in open public meeting. Or what often happens is that the attorney provides written advice, confidential, to the commission so that the commission has the benefit of that whenever they're making their decisions that are discussed during the open part of the meeting. But there is no exemption for just conference with the attorney. What about when you're negotiating an interlocal agreement or some kind of, or talking about negotiating strategy you might want to employ with a third party? Commonly, agencies think that, well, we should be able to have that conversation in private so that our strategy and our thoughts about how we're going to approach this contract can't be heard by the other side. That does make sense, but unfortunately, there is no exemption for that. So those discussions have to, again, be held out in public if they're going to be discussed at the board level. Commonly, those kinds of things are discussed between the manager and perhaps the chair of the board rather than at the board level. But you cannot have that discussion in executive session if it's at the board. What about interviewing potential board candidates? The evaluation of board candidates may be done in executive session. So if you've got a list of candidates that are to be, that you're considering, you can discuss those candidates in executive session. If you're going to interview them, though, that action needs to be done in, at the board level, needs to be done in an open part of the meeting. All right, common executive session purposes. There are some of the more common reasons to be in executive session. This is not comprehensive, but again, kind of the most common ones. Buying or selling real property. When public knowledge of the price would likely affect the price in a negative manner from our perspective. So if we're selling real property and if we discuss it out in the public and that would likely result in a lower selling price, then we can have that discussion in the executive session. We can review negotiations and the performance of a publicly bid contract. Again, where public knowledge would likely increase the cost to the agency if that discussion was held out to public. We can review the performance of our existing employees. We can evaluate the qualifications of an applicant for public employment. So someone who's applied and we're deciding whether or not we need to bring them on, such as a new chief or a new superintendent. And you can also meet with your legal counsel if it, again, if it's regarding litigation or potential litigation. Now, with regards to the potential litigation, I want to just make a few notes on this because this is a little bit more detailed than you might think. First of all, the attorney doesn't have to be here in person. The attorney just has to be part of the conversation. And oftentimes, in a case like this where I'm not, I'm back on the mainland, that discussion is usually held by conference phone in the meeting room. But the minutes need to reflect that the attorney was present in some fashion. Secondly, it has to be to discuss potential or actual litigation. And third, and this is almost always the case, but it is a requirement that public knowledge concerning the discussion is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequence if that discussion were to happen out in the public. So three requirements in order to discuss with your attorney something in executive session. Now, what happens if there is a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act? Keep in mind that violations are, and I didn't say this on this slide, but they have to be, in order to prove a violation, one has to prove that there was a knowing violation, so that a commissioner did something, violated the act in a knowing fashion. If a plaintiff is successful, then the court can impose a $500 penalty against the individual commissioner that violated the Open Public Meetings Act. If one commissioner has already received a violation, then a subsequent penalty for a subsequent violation would go up to $1,000. A successful plaintiff in such an action can recover, and I think it's mandatory under the statute, their costs and attorney's fees for bringing that action. And then finally, if final action was taken at that meeting, in other words, a motion was passed or a resolution was passed at a meeting that violated the Open Public Meetings Act, then that action could be declared null and void by the court. Okay, so let me just address minutes briefly. Minutes need to be taken of each meeting. When the auditor comes in, one of the first things they want to see are the minutes of your meetings. Those are to be promptly recorded and open to public inspection. Now, the statute doesn't say what it means to be promptly recorded. What I have always understood this to mean is those minutes are to be promptly prepared and open and available for the commission to approve at the next regularly scheduled meeting or special meeting, whichever meeting comes next, and then open to public inspection. The question always arises, are draft minutes that are prepared but not yet approved by the board, are those of public record? It might be a public record, and they probably are because they're a document that is prepared by the agency. We'll talk about what it means to be a public record in the next part of this presentation. Probably is public record, and when asked the question, I always say treat it as public record and disclose it if somebody asked for it. However, it's not an official record of the commission's action until such time as you have approved those minutes. Minutes are not taken for executive session, and they're not required, nor are would it make any sense to take minutes because those portions of the meeting are confidential. We'll talk about the commissioner's obligation in a little bit when you meet in executive session, because information that is discussed in those meetings is intended to be confidential, and a violation of that confidentiality would be a violation of law. So what about the content of the minutes? How detailed do they need to be? Well, when I first started representing fire districts, I had a couple of them that recorded the whole meeting. They had a tape recorder back in the days when we had tape recorders, and so they had cassettes and cassettes of all of these meetings. And of course, you had to keep them. Once you recorded them, you had to keep them because they're all public records now. It just got unwieldy. On the other hand, I've seen districts or agencies that basically show that there's a quorum and the official action that was taken at the meeting. So you could have those kind of skinny minutes, you could have the very detailed minutes where everything is talked about or people's points of view on every issue is recorded. The question is, what do you really need? When you review minutes, if you ever take the time to look at the city council meetings or county council meetings, you'll see that what's really important to you is what action did they take? What was the motion? What was the final action? In a lot of ways, you don't care about what the discussion was, although you might care about that as a member of the public or who do I vote for next election. But what you care about is what was decided by the commission. So I haven't looked at the public hospital district minutes. I don't know kind of where you fall in that scheme. But there's no legal requirement as to what needs to be in the minutes other than showing that there's a quorum present and the official action of the meeting in any executive sessions that are held. All right, we've talked about meetings that can occur through email. And again, this is something where you just need to be cautious of conducting discussions via email because they quite clearly, under Washington law and the cases that have interpreted the Open Public Meetings Act, those two-way discussions via email by a quorum of the board are meetings and subject to, they need to be held out in public. All right, I think that's all I need to say on that. A couple of miscellaneous issues, your meeting locations. Oftentimes your resolution should say where your regular meetings are going to be held. However, you can change the location of those meetings. A lot of times the agencies will decide that the board wants to have a retreat at a certain location, maybe travel to Eastern Washington to stay at Sun Peaks for the weekend and work on strategic planning or something of that nature. You can do that. You're not required to hold your meetings here in the jurisdiction, although most of the times you're going to do that. But on special occasions where you might need to get together for an extended period of time, it might make sense to go somewhere else, and you're entitled to do that. Occasionally, I'll get a call from a commissioner that has said, you know, we had an executive session, and I didn't think it was appropriate, and what should I have done? And my response always is, look, if you believe that an executive session is improperly called, in other words, that there's not a legitimate basis in the statute for you to be in an executive session, don't go, because you can be found to have violated the Open Public Meetings Act. If that was indeed an executive session that wasn't permitted by the Open Public Meetings Act. So again, it doesn't happen very often, but there have been some occasions in my career where I've been asked the question, and that's always the advice I give. What about bringing somebody into executive session? Oftentimes you will need to have communications with obviously, your lawyer is kind of the most common one. If you're dealing with litigation, you have to have your lawyer in there in order to kind of effectively discuss the issue. there may be other cases, other consultants. For instance, you may have a potential discrimination claim that has been filed by one of the employees. There's potential litigation. You've had a consultant do an investigation. You want that consultant to come in and tell you what the results of that investigation are. And it's all under the review of the performance of a public employee and potential litigation. So it's an appropriate reason to be in executive session, but you need to have somebody there to help you work through the discussion. That's completely fine. And what about giving direction to the manager or to an attorney or a consultant while in executive session? Again, as I said before, I don't think that that is final action. That happens quite frequently in situations like this, and I think that's an appropriate thing to do because there's no final action that's being taken, no decision that's being made, just some direction, which is entirely consistent with the Act.